identifying statistical accident hotspots on your local sectional chart. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Max Trescott, who is the 2008 National CFI of the Year and also a glass panel publishing magnate of some note based in California. Max, how are you doing today?
Hello, Paul. Welcome to the Trescott Network. No, wait, that would be Bloomberg, I guess.
Well, listen, you have a couple of really interesting topics recently on your blog at maxtrescott.com. The one I wanted to talk to you about today was flying safety tip. Identify local hotspots. And some of this was kind of intuitive. Some of it was a little more thought-provoking. And I think it becomes very timely because last weekend, there was a midair accident that occurred in Louisiana over a river where there was powerboat racing taking place. Two Cessna 150s struck wingtips and went down. There were two fatalities, two serious injuries. I think that for a lot of people, that's one of the more intuitive hotspots. In other words, a place where you could expect a cluster of accident statistics to occur. But you mentioned a couple of others in your blog post a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to talk about those. What are some of the less obvious places where people could get into trouble?
Certainly there are generic hotspots that you can find anywhere, such as VORs and airports and things like that. But then I've identified a few regional accident issues. And this goes back, 4 or 5 years ago. It all started with a conversation I had with our local FAA FAST team member. He was called the safety program manager at the time. And he made an interesting comment. He kind of joked that all of our local pilots were crashing in other FISDOs, which seemed rather odd to me, but kind of piqued my interest into, you know, how he was so good at his job, he got people to crash someplace else. And so I did an analysis over a 10-year period of all the accidents that occurred for pilots traveling to and from our area here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And that's where I was able to actually come across good hard data for the first time that really proved that the distribution of accidents in the San Francisco Bay Area is substantially different than the distribution of accidents around the rest of the country. So I think most people are probably familiar with the NOL report, mm-hmm. which AOPA puts out every year, or the Air Safety Foundation puts out, which is just really excellent. And typically it finds that the number one cause of accidents in the U.S. is maneuvering, so aircraft at low altitudes or, you know, in the pattern having problems and so on. And yet here in the Bay Area, it turned out that maneuvering was almost insignificant compared to some other accident types.
You noticed that in your area, there is a particular place where pilots go to avoid weather phenomenon that funnels them into a fairly narrow area.
Sure. Yeah. So what I did initially was I basically defined the area of interest, which was an area bounded by mountains. So I took a mountain range to the north of the San Francisco Bay Area, one to the south. And those two ranges are probably 70 miles apart, I would guess. And then another one to the about 30 miles to the east. And that became the defined area. And basically looked at all the accidents that occurred in that particular area. And that's where I discovered that fully half of all the accidents were concentrated in the Livermore Valley, a particular area which is itself ringed by mountains and particularly hazardous because a lot of pilots transition through that area to get back to the Bay Area. And unfortunately, those little mountain passes that they use at late in the day are the same ones that the marine layer, the clouds coming in from the ocean, are migrating through to the east. And unfortunately, when the clouds meet the mountain passes, it's just not a great place for pilots to be flying.
I want to come back from the break and ask you specifically about how we might be able to apply your research to our own areas, because I think that we might all learn something. Max Trescott's my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott. We're talking about accident hotspots, places where you could expect to see a statistical bulge in accidents in general aviation aircraft. We talked a little bit about VORs. Obviously, if you're planning a cross-country trip and you're flying radials and then making a turn over a VOR, other people might have the same idea. Max, you talked about an area of your region where, because of terrain and weather situations, it could be a dangerous area. Where do you do that kind of research? If I want to find out, for example, where in the Salt Lake Valley some of these hotspots might be that aren't obvious from, you know, the sectional chart, how do you go about doing that sort of research for your local area?
Essentially, I started with the NTSB database, and I was interested not just in airplanes that crashed in our area, but ones that transitioned through the area. So what I did was I did a search on every airport in our area, because all of those airplanes that passed through our area were either going to or from one of these particular airports. So if they departed from Livermore Airport, even if they crashed someplace else, I was able to identify them. Turned out, by the way, that the accident pattern for airplanes that were flying to and from the area was identical to the accident pattern for airplanes that were flying within the area and never left it. And basically, there were about 55% of all the accidents occurred at night, which is about 2.5 times worse than it is in the rest of the country. But number one step really is just identify the relevant area. And by the way, I know that in the last couple of years, the FAST team has started doing regional accident analysis. But I think the challenge they're having is that they are doing it within their particular geographic FAST team regions, which are not necessarily aligned with geographical features that make sense, or which are really too large. So I think people have to look at their own terrain, their own weather, their own circumstances, and figure, what's a relevant, area to look at. For example, if I were in Southern California, I would probably look at the LA Basin as being, a significant, region, but I wouldn't necessarily include the Imperial Valley, since that's, one mountain range away or things like that. You could also look at California's Central Valley, isolated from the rest of it. So figure out either, which areas make sense geographically because they're very similar, or which areas, may have unique weather type challenges, and then search for all accidents that occur within those particular regions.
And what do you get back? Do you get back something that's like an Excel spreadsheet or a comma delimited text file? Or, what do you get back that you can actually work with?
No, you're right. In fact, I ended up putting everything into to Excel. So basically, after searching the NTSB database, I read through all the different accidents and pulled out key factors, and that identified which accidents were VFR and IMC, which ones were night. Took a fair amount of reading, because in our case, over 10 years, we had just about 100 fatal accidents. So that's a lot of reports to read. And I would focus, frankly, on the fatal accidents. There's probably probably 3-4 times as many non-fatal accidents, which makes the problem much larger. But, frankly, the way I look at it is, if you're going to figure out how to save lives, let's look at preventing the fatal accidents and not worry so much about preventing the non-fatal accidents. Once you finish doing the analysis, the key thing to do is to figure out whether or not the differences that you see between your local area and the country as a whole are statistically significant. So in this particular case, I used the chi-square statistical measure to compare the accidents in the San Francisco area with those for the rest of the country as detailed in the NAAL report. And that's where I was able to prove that we actually have VFR and IMC accidents and night accidents, which are statistically different in terms of the frequency that they occur here in this particular area.
All right. Now, you drew a parallel to the practice in airlines of the sterile cockpit and applied it to these situations when you're near hotspots. How exactly does that work?
For a professional airline pilot, sterile cockpit rule basically applies to 10,000 feet. Anytime they are below 10,000 feet, then they have to be talking strictly about business. No chit-chat about the pension plan or what they're planning to do about the weekend and things like that. But for a lot of us flying smaller aircraft, well, we just aren't above 10,000 feet that often. So what I suggest suggest is that GA pilots may want to consider plus or minus 10 miles from their destination or their departure airport as the criteria for a sterile cockpit. So when you take off, try and keep the non-necessary chit-chat to a minimum for the first 10 miles or, 5 or 6 minutes after you leave. And then as you approach your destination, keep it all business in the cockpit when you're 10 miles out.
It sounds like good advice to me. Max, you're going to be a busy guy, I know, in the next couple of weeks. You've been really busy the last 4 or 6 weeks. What's new in the world of Max Trescott?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. The fourth edition of my G1000 Glass Cockpit Handbook will come out in just about 10 days. So look toward the end of October for that. That version is going to include all kinds of information, not just about the G1000, but it's been updated to include information on the Perspective, which is Cirrus's versions of the G1000 Glass Cockpit. And then I'll also be down at the AOPA Summit in Tampa coming up in early November and look forward to see people at my seminars there.
All right. We enjoy your blog at MaxTrescott.com, and we appreciate you taking some time.
Thanks, Paul. Great to talk to you. See you soon.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero, spelled AERO-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you next week at NBAA. Have a clear and unlimited day.